I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Spring is a time of religious observance and celebration for many people of different faith traditions. People will be celebrating Passover with Seders tonight and tomorrow. Easter observances commence on Sunday, and Ramadan begins at the end of the month. But the traditions of gathering, so often tied to food and family and friends, and the gatherings with congregations and faith communities are going to have to be different this year. So today on Vermont Edition, we're going to talk about how religious observances are changing, but also how many people are thinking about faith and spirituality perhaps a little differently now, given the crisis we're in. The Reverend Don Chatfield is the lead pastor and director of All Souls Interfaith Gathering, a non-denominational gathering of all kinds of faith and religions in Shelburne. And Don joins us now to help guide us through this conversation. Welcome, Don.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Are you feeling differently right now about faith and spirituality and tradition?
I am. And I think it's because, as you just mentioned, so many of our normal rituals and patterns have been disrupted. And what I'm noticing is a very deep hunger among people in our spiritual community to remain very deeply connected. And so we're seeing a new understanding that our community is not so much defined by the building we meet in or the property where we're situated, but really by our connections one to another.
How does that express itself, though, in, I mean, it, certainly being able to video conference with one another, being able to talk on the phone is wonderful and is a form of connection. But so much of connection is that energy that comes from being in the same space with other people, or an ability to hold silence when you're in the same space, which feels different if you're holding silence on a Zoom, you know, traditional celebration, and you can't tell whether it's a silence that's meant to be there or one where everybody just dropped out and froze. I mean, it feels different.
Well, it definitely is a different feel, and there's no doubt that we are missing the connection we have with one another in terms of physical presence, the ability to shake hands and give a hug. But I've been very gratified to see, for example, in our online meditation sessions, our attendance has actually gone up. For example, on Sunday mornings at 9, we have a meditation session that includes a 30-minute silent sit. And so we're very intentional about ringing a bell to start that time and sharing the silence together. And this past Sunday, we had members of our community, several of whom are out of state right now, join us and remark about how powerful it was to hold that space together. Part of our tradition after meditation is to share about what we experienced. And I had a request this week that we extend our share time because people felt it was so important to hear about what's going on and to connect in that way. So it's different, but we're finding that it's still a very powerful practice.
Lori is calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Lori.
Taking my call, and thanks for hosting this session. I'm hosting tonight an online Seder. It's the continuation of a family Seder that's been going on 118 years.
Wow.
Every year we meet. Yeah, it's really neat. And, you know, given the situation, my cousins and I and siblings looked at each other and said, well, what are we going to do? And I guess coming from the Jewish faith, a big part of our tradition is resilience. And so we're bringing it online. We have members of the family 9 months to 90 years old. So, you know, tomorrow I can let you know how it goes. But fingers crossed right now that we'll be able to do this. And, you know, I worry about the older generation, although they seem to be taking this in stride and worrying less than people like me. But the silver lining is we can connect cousins in Colorado, California, Massachusetts, Philadelphia, and Vermont.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. And in terms of the food, are you all trying to make sure you have the same exact foods? I mean, what if one family's kugel is better than another's? How are you going to know?
Oh, my gosh, we will never know. And my mom even said, kind of stopped for a second, and she said, oh, wait, you won't be sending it through Zoom. I have to, you know, figure this out on my own. But, no, we're doing, we always do family updates. So we'll do that where everybody talks a little bit about what's going on. I think that's going to be kind of chaotic. But then we go into the service where you have matzah and wine, and you tell the Passover story and the story of going into freedom, and you contemplate the idea of freedom together. And so we'll do all that together. But when it comes time to, like, cutting into a brisket, we'll do that on our own.
That's too bad, because you could have some really good family competition, maybe.
That's true. Well, maybe we'll give it a try. Thanks for the idea.
Well, Lori, thank you for telling us. I hope the Seder goes really well tonight, and, you know, happy Passover. Let's, while we're talking about Passover, talk now with Rabbi Amy Small, who's the senior rabbi of Ohavi Zedek Synagogue in Burlington. Rabbi Amy Small, nice to talk with you again.
Hi, Jane. Nice to talk with you.
Are you also doing an online Zoom-type Seder?
Yes, tonight and tomorrow night. And we have spent many days, Cantor Steve Zeidenberg and I, along with Rabbi David Edelson at Temple Sinai, working on our online Haggadah that will be a shared screen. And we're quite excited about what we've created. So this has brought out the creative juices in us.
So tell me a little bit about what people can expect.
We're going to have about an hour of a ritual, we estimate, and then we'll pause for meal. And we'll have an image on the screen to let people know that in 45 minutes we'll be back so people can have something to eat. If they're still eating, that's fine, when we'll restart, because the Seder has three parts, the beginning, the middle, and the end, and we'll have all three parts. I've said to some folks who have said that they're not sure if they can join or they might have something with their family, hey, pop in whenever you can. We'd love to see you. And that people should understand this is different than anything we've ever done. And the rules just aren't the same this time.
Yeah. So are you giving yourself a little grace as well for, you know, having a different kind of celebration and a different way to mark different occasions?
I am, although I must admit I made chicken soup and matzo balls and brisket and kugel because I couldn't help myself, but yeah.
So it doesn't sound like you had any trouble getting kosher for Passover food this year.
Well, I have to say that one of our members goes to Boston, where she has family, and picks up brisket for Passover well in advance, and so I've had that in the freezer. I have been able to find matzo, but I hear that in the last few days, people can't find it. And I've been hearing from members and from other people in the community, what do I do now? I don't have Passover food. And my answer is, do the best you can, and it's perfectly fine. If you're not going to sit with a piece of bread on your plate, you can make it Passover. One of my members said that she told the members of her family to cut out a picture of matzah from a magazine or from the internet they print out and hold it up, and that'll be their matzah if they can't find it at the store. And I said, that's good enough.
Yeah, so what Lori was talking about, you know, this tradition of resilience and you know, finding a way through, it's the case this year.
That's right. That's our tradition. We've been through a lot in our history, and there have been many times when we've lived through very difficult circumstances. I think about the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto during the Holocaust, and they still celebrated Passover and made some kind of a Seder. They didn't have all of the luxuries we have, and they did it anyway. This is our history for these almost 4,000 years.
So in terms of not necessarily just Passover, how else are you adapting to the stay-home order and services and different things that people might be doing? We've been hearing about online bar and bat mitzvahs, for example, but how else are you accommodating?
Yeah, we have been postponing bar and bat mitzvahs, but each time talking with the family about their preference. We are holding all of our services online, and as the pastor said, I have found that there's a deep hunger for this. More people are connecting than usual. Some people who are out of state, some of our snowbirds are stuck in Florida or in other parts of the country. And so we've had a lot of FaceTime, which is really very, very sweet. So we have a minion, which is a prayer service in the weekday evenings. And some days we can't make a minion in our usual life, but now we can. Everybody wants to be there. And we hold our Shabbat services on Zoom. The biggest challenge is that some of our older members are struggling with this adjustment, and we've been doing everything we can to help them.
Hmm. How are you doing that? I mean, if they don't have the technology or the aptitude, what do you do?
Yeah, that's part of the challenge. Well, we set up Tech Buddies, four members of our community who were willing to give their time and patiently walk individuals through the process of making Zoom work on their phone or their tablet or their computer. You can, of course, call in. We've had some people who have needed a few sessions because it's just so foreign to them. So we keep doing everything we can to be supportive, and they can call, they can send an email, hey, I need help, and we get somebody to help them.
For online Hebrew school, I don't know about all children, but mine, for example, are struggling with the idea that they have to do school at all. Are you finding that kids don't want to do online Hebrew school?
Actually, we've been finding that they want to, because it's a fun connection. They get to see the faces and the teachers. And so we've been having some really lovely sessions of singing, of fun games and activities, some with the individual teachers for the classes, but some as a group. And it's been working. And maybe that's because it's not their daytime whole activity as school is supposed to be.
So, Rabbi Small, in terms of people who might mark Shabbat without any technology at all, how are people able to still stay connected given that technology seems to be how so many faith traditions are holding services at all?
So are you referring to those who would have a feeling that you're not supposed to use a computer?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So I have been in conversation with colleagues all around the country and in Israel, and there have been some Orthodox rabbis who have made rulings that it's okay to do this, which I found pleasantly shocking because it's not the way we usually do things. That certainly isn't across the board in the Jewish world, but my people in our community have moved with it. Those who are even among the most observant have realized this is the only way we'll be able to pray together, and they are using the technology.
That's Rabbi Amy Small, senior rabbi of Ojave Tzedek Synagogue in Burlington, which is holding virtual seders for Passover tonight and tomorrow night. Thank you so much for talking with us, and happy Passover.
Thank you so much, and happy Easter to our Christian friends, and a blessed Ramadan to our Muslim friends. Thanks, Jane.
We're also talking right now with the Reverend Don Chatfield, lead pastor and director of All Souls Interfaith Gathering in Shelburne. Are you finding that people may be feeling a different connection to their faith or to their spirituality because we're in a time of unrest and a time of struggle for so many people?
We are, and that has been the topic of several of our online conversations. I think a large part of it has to do with the sense of loneliness that many have been feeling, the sense of disconnection. And so we focused on spiritual tools that allow us to go within and to find the peace within us. And so I've been hearing from a number of our regulars about how they feel that their spirituality is actually deepening during this period as they have time to practice these contemplative tools.
When you work with people who come to gather in whatever technology or non-technological way they're doing so at All Souls and are coming with perhaps different backgrounds in faith or different ideas about spirituality and religion, how do you accommodate all of the different viewpoints and different belief systems that people may be operating under?
Well, first of all, we do that very gently. We believe that taking an interfaith approach is never about replacing something that we've grown up with, but offering something in addition to. And so we meet together in a place of deep respect, a desire and a hunger really to learn more about other traditions. For example, this past Sunday, we had a discussion group called Our Search for Meaning. And the book started out of a discussion of Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And on that Zoom call, we had a chance to hear several different faith perspectives on how to deal with this current situation. And we agreed at the end of the call that we all grew by understanding these different approaches to spirituality.
Hmm. The Reverend Don Chatfield, lead pastor and director of the non-denominational All Souls Interfaith Gathering in Shelburne, is with us this hour. And let's go to Dean, who's calling in from Queechee. Hi, Dean. What are you experiencing?
Hi. I just wanted to point out that with the situation as it is, there is a way for alcoholics and addicts to reach each other through online meetings, and it's been very beneficial. And I just wanted to throw that out for people that are not aware of this to check that out.
And Dean, do you see the AA as a spiritual fellowship?
Absolutely. For me, it's been extremely beneficial. And, you know, I have my own faith, but anybody that, you know, that whatever faith you have, you can be a member of AA. And as long as you believe in a higher power, which could be Christianity, it could be Judaism, whatever it is, people are welcome.
Dean, have you found that in these moments when we're in this really trying time for so many, your relationship to spirituality has changed or not?
For me, it hasn't changed. I've always been a spiritual person, and even before I, you know, became a member of AA. But for some people it has. I mean, I guess it has increased a little bit more with my hope through my faith.
Well, thank you.
That we're all going to pull together to work this out.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing that. Appreciate that, and appreciate you reminding people that they can still access AA and other treatment programs and groups through online ways. And we are working on a show about that, so we'll try to keep that in mind as well as we move forward, because there may be a way to access those, and we'll talk about it through our show. I want to read a note from Rachel, who wrote in. We were talking earlier about Passover, and Rachel says, "Throughout our history, the Jewish people have suffered through long periods of oppression, eviction, anti-Semitism, and of course, genocide. The whole point of the Passover Seder is to celebrate the passing from slavery to freedom, and specifically to recall the story of our ancestors who were forced out of Egypt because of the way we lived. It always leads to reflection and meaningful discussion. What are modern-day plagues? How are we still enslaved as Jews? How are others still living in oppression? What kinds of oppression exists within our very own communities? How easy it will be for our children this year to connect this theme of slavery, at least as it relates to not having the freedom to move around, associate with whom we would like to, go where we want to go, study as we wish, etc. This year at our Zoom Seder, we are in Vermont and grandparents will be Zooming in from Florida and New York. The theme of freedom from oppression seems very fitting. As a whole planet, we are deeply suffering right now. And with orders to stay home, we certainly have lost our freedom to move around and do what we want. Not only is tonight's Seder a good opportunity to reflect on the story of our ancestors, but also to acknowledge and have gratitude for the many freedoms we do have. Many people celebrating Passover tonight having virtual Seders, or maybe just a very small Seder by yourself or with your family. Others will be celebrating Easter this weekend. And let's talk for a bit with Mitch Kimbrell, Associate Pastor at Christ Memorial Church. It's a Baptist church in Williston. Hello, Pastor Mitch. Thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
So what is your congregation doing this year for Easter? How are you going to be doing it?
Well, it's a very different Easter, of course, than any of us could have predicted last Easter or even at the beginning of this year. But we're going to lean into the technology that we're very thankful exists now. And our church has a YouTube channel. And so each Sunday morning for the past several weeks, ever since the governor's social distancing guidelines were put into place, our church has been meeting virtually, as it were, over our church's YouTube channel. So we have a sermon that's on YouTube Live, and then it's archived so that folks can go back and listen to it later. And that's what we'll do this coming Sunday. We don't have any live music. We have a live sermon, and then there are songs that tie into the theme of the sermon, or as would be the case this coming Sunday, Easter Sunday, that families can sing together. There are questions for the children to discuss with other family members. And so we're mindful that there's really no substitute for the bodily gathering, and that nothing we do online is going to closely approximate the bodily gathering. But we do want to provide some means for people to gather around the Bible and to hear the gospel preached.
Are any of you actually doing this at the church, and or are you sort of sharing the duties but going from one place to another, one person's home to another as you move forward in the service?
Well, the Sunday sermons have so far been from our church's senior pastor, and he's doing them at home, and he's observing the stay-at-home order, as are the rest of the pastoral staff that have been teaming up to produce the daily devotional. So it's important to us, with passages like Romans chapter 13 in mind, where the Bible teaches us to submit to the governing authorities that have been put in place by the Lord, to abide by Governor Scott's strictures. And so we've been trying to do that even in the way that we do our Sunday morning services and our daily devotionals.
You have a YouTube channel, which it sounds like you had set up even before the COVID-19 pandemic. So you already were, technological producers and able to do this, it sounds like.
Well, Jane, you're really giving us more credit than we deserve, I suppose. The COVID-19 social distancing is what spurred us on to create the YouTube channel. We didn't have a YouTube channel previously. And so this has really been our first foray into this kind of technology. And again, we're very thankful for it, while also acknowledging that it's no substitute for getting together in person, and we really long for the day when we can do that again.
I see. So this was not something that you're well versed in already.
No. But we're giving in our best shot.
You know, when it comes to helping those in need who may have relied on the church in the past, and I don't mean necessarily for material goods, but for spiritual support, and so often that is done face-to-face, or so often it becomes clear who in the community, who in the congregation might need a little extra support through face-to-face gatherings. How are you managing that?
You know, for years, our church began in 1992, and I've only been up here for nearly 3 years, but I think very near our church's inception, our church had small groups, what we call community groups. And so that infrastructure has been in place for, I guess, decades now. And we're really seeing that structure be very helpful to us in this time, because each of the community group leaders is checking in on the folks in their community group at least once a week, finding out, how are you doing spiritually? How are you doing emotionally? How are you doing physically? How are you doing financially? We see from places in the Bible, like the New Testament book of Acts, that the early church took very seriously that they needed to help their brothers and sisters in Christ out in times of any kind of need, but certainly that includes financial need. So we're trying to check on those kinds of things as well, while also doing what we can to let others outside the church know of our willingness to help if we can be a help.
We got a note from Rick who says, "I'm not religious, but I know people who are. When I ask who is causing this current treacherous health situation, half of those friends tell me it's the devil, because he exists, and the other half tell me it's God meting out punishment. Can you disabuse this curious soul?" Pastor Mitch, what would you say to that question?
Well, I'll tell you what I understand the Bible to teach, which is really what is the crux of the matter for me. What does God have to say about it? And what the Bible teaches is that God is in control of all things, and that everything he does, as hard as it is, sometimes even as impossible it is for us to understand, is just and wise and righteous and holy. And we understand that trials like these, according to places like the book of James or the book of 1 Peter, are used by the Lord. He really redeems these trials to make the faith of his people more pure. It's kind of like the Bible likens trials like these to a refiner's fire, where gold with impurities is put in, the heat is turned up. If you could personify the gold bar, it certainly wouldn't enjoy the fire, but what it undergoes as a result is a purification. The dross is melted off, skimmed off, so what you have as a result is purer gold, or in this case, purer faith. So, yeah, we don't blush at realizing that the Bible says that God is totally in control, that he's totally sovereign over all things. There's a lot that the Bible doesn't let us understand, all of the ins and outs, but But no, this is something that God is in control of. And for those who have placed their faith in him, this is something that's used to lift our eyes above this world and to set our hopes on heaven, where there's no more plague, no more coronavirus, no more social distancing, or any of those kinds of things. So there are a lot of things that God is up to in the midst of this trial, but he's certainly in control of it, and he's sovereign over it.
Well, that's Mitch Kimbrell, associate pastor at Christ Memorial Church. It's a Baptist church in Williston. Mitch Kimbrell, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome, Jane. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome, and happy Easter. We're also talking with Don Chatfield from the All Souls Interfaith Gathering in Shelburne. And Billie Jean is calling in from Sheldon. Hi, Billie Jean.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead. What are you doing and thinking and feeling?
Well, we are having church through our Facebook and through online. And it's wonderful, and it includes children's time, which is videoed at home, or a choir practice or a choir performance from the past. So we put together these things, and it's wonderful. And recently we had a coffee hour, and we used Zoom, and it added something. When we're lonesome for the people and their faces and their closeness to us, we were able to see each other and our homes and our pets, and it was a very wonderful time. It's not the same, of course, but it really brought us together and felt wonderful. And this is the Holy Week, and we miss our Monday, Thursday service and our Good Friday time, and it's very different, and it makes it harder because we're so used to coming together through those traditions and services. But it brought me joy, and I think the rest of us to see each other again that way in a community setting.
Well, Billie Jean, thanks for sharing that, and I'm glad that the church happy coffee hour went so well. It's lovely to hear that. Let's talk to Val, who's with us from St. Johnsbury. Hi, Val. What about for you?
Hello. Hi, James. What a wonderful program you have on. I would like to share with everybody another way that you can bring spirituality and tradition into your own home. And what we've been doing is we create an altar. And started this before the coronavirus. I started it this winter to help us with the dark nights. And so in our kitchen, on the sideboard, we have candles, and every month it changes with the full moon. And we choose as a family what we're going to put on the altar. So we just had sugaring season, so we had a maple, you know. We had maple and things that my kids have collected from the forest, and rocks and candles. And then every night we light the candles. And then recently there was a thunderstorm. We had our first lightning storm. And I ran outside, and I put a bowl outside, and I collected the rainwater. And this for this altar, we have a little bottle of the rainwater, and every night we each dip our fingers into it, and we bless each other, and we do whatever symbol the other person wants on their forehead. And it's just a really nice, and I just want to remind people that you can make things sacred. You have that power. Take that and do that, and nobody else needs to tell you what's sacred. So that's been bringing us comfort.
Well, Val, what a lovely tradition, and thank you for sharing it with us and for empowering people to find the sacred within themselves. Let's hear another voice from Father Rick, who's calling in from Stowe. Hello, Father Rick.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, so go right ahead.
Sure. So one of the things that I get to do is wear two hats. Not only am I the priest at St. John's Episcopal Church in Stowe, but I'm also an innkeeper, and one of the things that I've been able to do, attempted to do, is bridge some gaps between, or the gap between church world and community world. And one of the pieces that is I'm trying to do is invite everyone to light a candle every night at 7 o'clock. And I put a big sign out in front of my inn on Route 17 in Faiston. I put it on Front Porch Forum and on my website, and I attempt to offer that as a message of hope to my congregation as well. And last week was a perfect example. It was dark and dreary, a perfect March in April in Vermont, and just keep lighting those candles.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Father Rick, and how appropriate to be lighting candles at 7 and joining that energy that so many people are sending out into the world at 7 p.m., whether it is this sort of sense of spirituality or a sense of togetherness, and thanks to frontline and healthcare workers. Thank you for sharing that, Father Rick. With us this hour is the Reverend Don Chatfield, lead pastor and director of All Souls Interfaith Gathering in Shelburne. What are you hearing, Don, that really speaks to you from what our guests and our callers have been saying?
Well, I'm hearing a consistent desire for connection during this dark period and for a sense of meaning coming out of it. And that parallels what we're experiencing at All Souls. It's interesting, as you look across all of the religious traditions, there are teachings that address the spiritual growth that comes out of dark times. And the religious observances that you've mentioned this month that we're observing really all have a common theme about hope coming out of a period of darkness. And so it's been gratifying to both hear in the callers today and also to experience in our community that hope growing.
Do you celebrate one or more of these observances?
We do. This coming Sunday, we'll have on our YouTube channel an Easter service. And the approach that we take to Easter is to celebrate the new life of many faiths that's celebrated at this time of the year. And so we look to learn from the wisdom traditions across the faiths. And we'll also be having a meditation prior to that that will focus on this time of new birth.
One of the things that I understand you also think about and concentrate on is you know, the power and the energy of the earth. And I'm curious how you're seeing that manifest now with so many people not driving, you know, around the world. We're seeing some changes in terms of air pollution, and even in Santiago, Chile, 3 cougars have come through the capital there. And so some differences with animals, although I also acknowledge that some of those stories actually have been fake news about animals moving into areas that they previously didn't. But, you know, there's sort of a different experience of the world and of the earth right now. And so many Vermonters, I think, are finding ways to get outside, which is allowed in the stay-home order, and maybe feel this connection to the world in a different way at springtime, at this time of rebirth. How are you experiencing that?
Well, we have also noticed the kinds of resilience that the planet is showing during this time when we're taking a pause. And while it's sad that this kind of crisis was required to bring this about, it also gives us hope that there are still adjustments that we can make to help the planet heal. And earth care is a key part of our spiritual life at All Souls. It's one of our 4 pillars, caring for the environment. And one of the things that we have done during this time, although our building is closed and we're not meeting in person for services, we've made it clear that people who would like to come and walk on the grounds, perhaps take a walk in our labyrinth, or sit and meditate in our earth wheel, or walk the nature path, are welcome to do so, because we think it's so important to keep that connection with nature alive during this time.
Let's go to Mark, who's calling in from Essex Junction. Hi, Mark. Hi there, Mark.
Hello.
Hi, what's your experience? Mark, do we have you? All right, well, let's go to our next guest, Zara Ayoubi, Assistant Professor of Religion at Dartmouth College. Professor Ayoubi teaches courses on Islamic studies and gender and religion. Professor Ayoubi, nice to talk with you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we're pleased to have you with us, and one of the reasons we wanted to talk about what's happening in the Islamic tradition is because, you know, Ramadan is coming up, and this is also a time for togetherness and a connection around food in the evenings after sundown, and I'm wondering what you're hearing and seeing as people realize they're not necessarily going to be able to gather together in communities beyond the sort of isolation pods we each have with our families.
Yeah, so I've been noticing a lot of different reactions with respect to Ramadan coming. After the initial shock or sadness, which I think is sort of generally felt across the nation about amongst American Muslims, that Ramadan is going to be very different from ever before. After that feeling, I think people are trying to figure out ways to make meaningful connections during this time. And one of the things that's actually unique to Northern New England, and specifically Vermonter Muslims and Muslims in New Hampshire, is that the communities of Muslims is really, really small. And Ramadan ends up being an annual sort of moment where Muslims who don't necessarily cross paths with one another because communities are so small and spread apart. I mean, Muslims are just sort of rather disconnected often in Northern New England. You know, that opportunity in Ramadan is going to be missing this year, that opportunity to recharge and come together and see other co-religionists and actually celebrate together and break fast and worship together and so on and so forth. So I think with that being missing, it's going to be particularly hard for Northern New Englanders. But there are lots of, I guess, hopeful notes in that there's preparations underway for things to go on virtually.
Is there a sense of grief in that, you know, in for communities that are small and for Muslims who really just wait for this opportunity to connect with one another? There must be some sense of grief in that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, normally Ramadan tends to be the annual moment where, you know, people can actually, you know, see other co-religionists and meet with them and spend time, as I said, and Eid, the festival at the very end of Ramadan, that marks the end of the month, and is a general celebration time for happiness. That tends to be a moment where even people who are not necessarily observant in Ramadan, or they are privately observant in their own homes, or in general, people who may not be observant or might be private about their observance throughout the year, you know, Eid tends to bring out the excitement and happiness in everyone, and people generally like to come out and celebrate together, regardless of how they practice throughout the month and indeed throughout the year, and that is going to be a really tense time for a lot of people. Very, as you said, you know, there will be a lot of grieving for the loss of that moment, and especially for children, because, you know, their kids don't get to see one another, other Muslim kids, and Eid tends to be celebratory specifically for them, but for the adults too. So I think people are going to have to get really creative to sort of have a sense of community through Ramadan, but also especially for Eid.
What about in terms of finding ingredients? You know, Rabbi Amy Small, who we spoke with earlier, told me that she often goes up to Montreal in advance of Passover to get some of the food she really wants to cook with. And of course, she can't do that this year. Are you finding that it's difficult for some Muslims in Vermont and New Hampshire to be able to get the ingredients that they would like to be able to cook with to break the fast?
I think it really depends on you know, what traditions people are celebrating in. So, you know, there's obviously there's Muslims being such a diverse community, with Muslims worldwide reaching a billion. You know, Muslims are really from everywhere, and American Muslims are sort of a microcosm of that greater diversity. And so depending on where people are from, you know, the ingredients that are typical, typically used for celebratory dinners or, you know, just breaking fast, it really depends on where you're from and what traditions you're used to. I mean, there, that said, though, there are many, many cultures, you know, across Muslim communities that that have special foods during Ramadan that are sort of regional specific, local, you know, specific. And and some of those ingredients might in fact be difficult. You're right. Dates are sort of universally eaten as a breakfast, as part of the breakfast meal. And usually people get their date, usually in the United States, people get their dates from California. So who knows what the shipping situation is going to be like at this time. But yeah, other ingredients probably as well. People generally like to stock up when they go to, you know, larger communities like, you know, Manchester, Boston, and probably Burlington as well. So it depends, I think, on what they're celebrating with. But yeah, there are certainly I guess ethnic food stores that will probably suffer business because of this as well.
We heard earlier from Associate Pastor Mitch Kimbrell from the Christ Memorial Church, who was talking about passages in the Bible that that some Christians are pulling out to look at. You know, this is one area where we can sort of gather some insight by reading the Bible. Are there passages from the Quran that people are looking at right now to find meaning in this really challenging time?
Yeah, I think so. So without getting to specific passages, I mean, I would say there are definitely verses that that are relevant as far as giving people hope, deliverance from all kinds of trials. The verses about Prophet Job come to mind, as well as so many others that that are about and stories about Moses, for example, are very much prevalent in the Quran, and Muslims do look to those in times of trial. I have also noticed that there are lots of online groups that are also promoting a sort of Islamic psychology kinds of events where they're trying to provide counseling against depression and grief and so on during this time that are centered around Islamic spiritual healing and things like that. So. And I know that a lot of mystical groups, Sufi groups, which are a subset of Muslim practitioners, they are also having sort of meditations and sort of Islamic spiritually centered programs for people to cope.
Hmm. That's Zahra Ayyubi, Assistant Professor of Religion at Dartmouth College. Professor Ayyubi teaches courses on Islamic studies and gender and religion. Thank you very much for sharing your perspective with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Ramadan Mubarak to those who celebrate and who will be observing Ramadan starting at the end of this month. Don Chatfield, what about for people who are finding their faith tested or are not really finding comfort in spirituality right now? Do you have advice?
I think it's important to reach out to others who can be supportive. We have noticed that quite often the face of spirit shows up through other people. So I would encourage people to reach out and to make connections with others who are willing to be there for them.
Are you doing that too?
I am. It's been interesting that during this time, my wife and I have found it important to reach out to family members. And we've also been experiencing wonderful reconnections with old friends. And that's definitely a part of the time of healing that we all need.
Well, I appreciate you being here with us and helping us guide us through this conversation today. And I hope it all goes well on Sunday in your virtual services.
Thanks so much for having me today.
That's the Reverend Don Chatfield, lead pastor and director of All Souls Interfaith Gathering, which is a non-denominational gathering of all kinds of faith and religion in Shelburne. And for all those of you who may be celebrating religious or spiritual moments in the coming weeks, I wish you all well. That's it for today. Tomorrow, we are still working on what the shows are going to be, so stay tuned and we'll keep you posted. And let us know what you want to hear from Vermont Edition. You can always email us, vermontedition@vpr.org. Our show today was directed by Jake Rusnak. Our production team includes managing producer Lydia Brown and producers Matthew Smith and Emily Aiken. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.